This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. She got her start on the soap opera As the World Turns, but Julianne Moore is famous for her roles, often edgy roles, in independent films like Shortcuts, Safe, The Big Lebowski, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Far From Heaven, and I'm Not There. She made her film debut in the 1992 thriller The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. In 2003, she received two Oscar nominations, one for her performance in The Hours, the other for Far From Heaven. Now she's starring in the new film Savage Grace, which was adapted from the nonfiction book by Barbara Daly about Barbara Daly Bakeland. Bakeland entered the elite social world when she married Brooks Bakeland, the heir to the Bakelite plastics fortune. But when their marriage fell apart, so did her life and her son's life. This is a story of social climbing, jealousy, incest, and madness. Here's a scene from early in the film, set in Paris in 1959. The marriage has soured, and Barbara's social attentions are focused more on her son than her husband. Barbara is having lunch in the park with her son, talking about their privileged lives and comparing it to the life she was brought up in by her mother, who she refers to as Ninny.
Some people's fathers, some people's mothers, they have to go to an office or a factory or a store, I guess, every day. But we are fortunate. Because what we do is what we love. What does Francois's father do?
He works.
Well, we worked. I mean, father worked. Nini worked. There was no other way. I kind of had to raise myself, and then I worked too. And Philippe's. And when I could, I left. I just left. Nini wanted what was best for me. Only what was best for me. Find the man, she'd say. She meant man, I guess, and she meant money. The rich, they don't have pet names for money.
Julianne Moore, welcome back to Fresh Air. Let me ask you to describe Barbara Bakeland, the character that you play, who was a real person. What's your take on her?
Yeah. Well, she was from the wrong side of the track, so to speak, you know, in terms of these society people. She came from Boston with her mother. She came to New York City to marry somebody, to find a rich husband. And she she dated lots of sort of society people, and then went to Hollywood for a screen test, where, interestingly enough, she discovered that she didn't want to be an actress because it was too hard. She didn't want to work. You know, she really wanted, this is somebody who definitely wanted glamour and society and fame and attention without anything underneath it. You know, I mean, I think that was probably her greatest tragedy in her life, was that it was all kind of her pursuits were sort of, you know, hollow. But it didn't make her any less human. She was also kind of passionate and alive and engaged and narcissistic and difficult. And I mean, you know, she was sort of people would say about Barbara, like, in one breath they'd say how she was the life of the party, but then they never wanted to have dinner with her ever again. She's that kind of person.
I think one of the interesting things about your performance is Barbara Bakeland had gone to Hollywood, you know, wanting to be an actress, and then, as you've said, just didn't want to have to do the work. But the way you play her, she's acting through her life, because she's not a person who grew up in society. She's not a person born to money, but she acts like she was. And sometimes that veneer just kind of falls away, and you see the person who she really is
underneath. And she also doesn't act well either. You know, I mean, there are times, you know, she's kind of a poser. And I even tried in the performance, because the movie takes place in these little kind of these vignettes at the very beginning in the 40s. I wanted my speech to have a quality more like old movies.
Yes.
You know, more like she was copying the way she thought she should speak. By the time we get to the 70s, her speech becomes much more relaxed and more sort of the time or whatever.
Savage Grace is an independent film. You've had, like a lot of people now, you've had a dual career in more commercial films and more independent films.
Yeah.
And in your independent films, you've done some pretty risky material. And you seem to, in fact, gravitate to movies about extreme characters, or, you know, movies that take risks with their subject matter. Let me play a great scene that you're in the movie Magnolia, and this is one of Paul Thomas Anderson's films. And in this film, you're married to a character played by Jason Robards. He's very sick, and he's dying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he has a prescription for liquid morphine that you've been getting for him. And in this scene, you go into a pharmacy, you get a prescription filled. And you want to set up the scene for us?
I'm going to get a prescription filled, and I attack the pharmacist because I think he thinks that I'm, you know, that I'm a junkie, that I'm a drug addict. And he doesn't treat me with the kind of respect that I think I deserve as somebody who is taking care of a dying man. I'm saying, you don't know who I, you know, you don't, basically it's you don't know who I am just by looking at me. Don't think you know who I am.
So you're getting the morphine and other heavy duty drugs at the pharmacy, and the pharmacist comments that this is strong, strong stuff. And he says to you, "What exactly do you have wrong with you that you need all this?" And that's when you really erupt. Here's the scene.
That's
when,
I come in here. You don't know me. You don't know who I am, what my life is, and you have the balls, the decency to ask me a question about my life. You do. Don't you call me lady. I come in here. I give these things to you. You check. You make your phone calls. Look suspicious. Ask questions. I'm sick. I have sickness all around me, and you ask me my life. What's wrong? I'm using death in your bed, in your house. Where's your decency? And then I'm asking questions. What's wrong?
That's a great scene. That's Julianne Moore in Magnolia. Yeah, we had to bleep a lot there. Well, you're really unraveling at this point, without getting too deep into the story, explaining why. But one of the interesting things about that scene is that you're doing your lines in an almost musical way, because your hysteria has kind of like taken you out of regular conversation into this world of almost, you know, music. And at the same time, you have this very dramatic music behind you. Did you know what the music behind you would be, that would be a counterpoint to what you were saying?
You never know that. You never know how a movie's going to be scored. That's one of the weird things about seeing a film when it's completed, is that you don't know how it's going to be edited. You don't know how it's going to be scored. You don't know how the color timing is going to work. It could be brighter. It could be darker than what you thought. So, you know, it's not an actor's medium. You're really in the hands of the director in terms of how the performance kind of is shaped. There have been times when I felt like I've been in stuff that's overscored, and I'm like, oh no, oh gosh, you know, I didn't feel that way with this. I think it was a beautifully scored movie, so I think I really liked it.
Over the years, you've played a lot of characters who have their moments of breakdown, hysteria, or they're just sobbing. Have you developed different ways of sobbing depending on who your character is?
Yeah, you have to, because they're all different people. You know, one of the questions that I get a lot is, you know, how do you make yourself cry? Or do you, you know, people say, do you think of something? Do you? And I can't make myself cry. Only the character can make me cry. She has to cry. So I have to be in the place where she is, and her circumstances bring me to tears. And hopefully the character then the crying is like her. It's not going to be like me or like some other character that I did. Or, you know, I think there's some characters, I've had some silent criers, I've had some, you know, some wailers and some sobbers, and, you know, but it has to be, not to sound all touchy-feely about it, but it has to be the character who kind of presents it to me.
Have you become an observer of the different ways in which people cry or lose control?
Oh, well, you know, the interesting thing about it is it's something that we very rarely see, because people don't like to do it. I was just doing a movie recently where, as usual, I had some crying, and every time I had to do it, I just kind of moan and complain, and I was like, oh, I don't want to. And the director said, why? Because you can do it, and you seem to do it so easily. I said, well, no. I said, the thing about crying is that's one of the things that we don't like to show people. We don't usually show people that. We usually try to hide it. We're always trying not to cry. So to get yourself, even to get yourself to a character, to a place where you are doing it, is a weird, you know, sort of twist to it. You're in an emotional place. You have to allow it to happen because it has to happen on screen, but at the same time, everything in your body is telling you not to do it.
Julianne Moore is my guest, and she stars in the new film Savage Grace. Let me move on to a scene from another film. This is a film also directed by Paul Thomas Anderson, Boogie Nights. Mm-hmm. It's your first film with him. And in this, you're an actress in the porn industry, and your lover and director is played by Burt Reynolds. And Mark Wahlberg plays like the new actor who arrives on the scene.
That's right.
And
the big,
is making movies with you. Yeah, the big star who's very well endowed.
Yeah.
And so in this scene, you're a casting agent at a desk for a porn film, and Dirk Diggler, played by Mark Wahlberg, walks in to audition.
Action, Dirk.
Hello, are you John?
Yes, ma'am.
Your agency recommends you very highly.
Well, I'm a really hard worker, and if you give me a job, I won't disappoint you.
What special skills do you have?
Well, I've been in the Marines for 3 years. I just got back from a tour of duty.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. And it got really hard being surrounded by all those guys all day.
How long has it been since you've had a woman?
A long time.
That's terrible.
But now I'm back, and I'm ready to pursue my acting career.
Well, as you may or may not know, this is an important film for me. If it's not a hit, I'm going to get kicked out of my apartment. My landlord's a real jerk.
Really?
I see with Julianne Moore and Mark Wahlberg from Boogie Nights. So in this scene, like you're both intentionally being really, you know, amateurish, bad actors.
Right. Right.
So what did you do to...
Well, when you're acting, the idea is to basically it boils down to being as realistic as possible in a film. You want to be behaving as people do in real life, which is difficult when you're being observed. But we have, you know, we've learned how to do that. We've learned how to do that by relaxing our bodies and our voices and being connected and being in the moment and looking at somebody. And there's a way that you train yourself to be able to behave that way. Now, if you're not trained, if you're not an actor, if you're not even an instinctive actor, you're not going to know how to speak with inflection. You're not going to know how to move your body and use your voice at the same time. That's something that I do. I never move on a line. Like I make a movement and then I say the line, which is one of the things that young, you know, people, inexperienced actors do all the time. And it's hysterical. So I love that Mark has that. He has a fumble in his line. He goes, I'm a Marine and I just got back. And, you know, he corrects himself midline. When we all do that, you know, you always start a line, stop it, start it, whatever. But in this case, you know, because they're just on this little porn movie, they just leave all the mistakes in.
You seem to place your voice higher and in a more uncertain place in that scene, too.
Yeah, I did. I put it over, like, above my, you know, larynx. So it's not connected either. Like, when people are afraid, they can't, you know, they're on top. You know, she's, like, on top of her voice. She's not in her voice because she's not in her body. You know, she's not really present in a way.
Do you have a favorite story from the making of Boogie Nights?
Well, you know, it was funny. I do remember the scene where I give Mark coke for the first time. And at the end of the scene, in the script, it said they embrace. So I'm supposed to, you know, do the coke, do the scene, and my interpretation, give him a hug. And Paul's like, okay, and then you kiss him. And I panicked. You know, I absolutely panicked. I had to do all this stuff with him, you know, all this pulling out of the rubber appendage and him lying on top of me and whatever. But I didn't think I had to kiss him. So I remember thinking, I mean, I was absolutely terrified. It put me in a cold sweat. I did it. It was all fine. And I mean, I love Mark, but that was what was so funny to me is that after all that, the thing that really freaked me out, I was like, oh my gosh, now I've got to kiss him.
What? Why did that freak you out?
Well, you know, because kissing is pretty intimate. It's probably, I mean, that's a very intimate thing. It's probably more intimate than taking your clothes off in front of somebody in a weird sort of way.
you'd be able to speak about that because in an earlier
film. I've done both.
Yes. Well, like in Altman's film, Shortcuts, you were uh-huh. naked from the waist down in a very dramatic scene. So,
right.
Did you have to
Which
overcome?
Which created quite a furor. I was nervous. You know, I was nervous about it. But Bob, oh my gosh, I loved Bob so much. And he was so kind and so caring. And as far as Bob was concerned, you know, an actor couldn't do anything wrong because he had hired them and therefore they were right, you know. So he just gave you all this latitude. And so I felt very taken care of, you know. I felt, you know, nervous about the scene because it was such a dramatic scene. But he was trying to communicate something that Raymond Carver had written and in a cinematic way. And he did it by kind of peeling off that kind of intimacy, that's the way you are physically with somebody in a marriage. That's something that we see with our partners all the time. So he was doing that in that. And so I didn't find it at all salacious. It's certainly not sexual.
So you were never self-conscious about doing that?
No, yeah, obviously, you know, I'm a little bit, you know, physically self-conscious. You always are. You're always like, oh, okay. But I didn't feel frightened. I felt like it was the appropriate thing in the scene. It wasn't like one of those things where you see an actor having to take their top off and walk across a room. I didn't feel like it didn't feel pointless to me. I understood why it was there and how it contributed to the fabric of that scene. So no, I didn't feel challenged by it. But yeah, normal kind of self-consciousness, like, oh gosh, I hope I look okay. Yeah, there's always that.
How did it contribute to the fabric of the scene? Why was it essential?
Because I think, you know, this was a movie where a man was trying to figure out whether or not his wife was having an affair. And in the short story, in Raymond Carver's short story, he's thinking of her. Like, it keeps, you know, you keep flashing back to him seeing her with him, physically with him, or with another man, or doing something. You know, he keeps flashing to these moments of what she looks like physically, her body, while she's, like, doing this kind of mundane stuff in the house. So Bob was trying to find a way to have that, put that element in there in a visceral kind of way. So this man is presented with his wife's physicality and her sexuality and her corporalness, I think. And so he said, he was like, this is what's going to happen. And like I said, in a way, it's something that happens in a marriage all the time. You're in the bedroom, your husband's out of the shower, and he slowly starts to get dressed, and he's telling you what he's going to do that day. And then you say, well, I have to pick up the kids or I have to do whatever. But you're confronted by each other's bodies and our physicality all the time. So that's what, you know, I think that's what Bob was doing in that. And in a way, I think that is why people were so kind of inflamed by it, because it felt too intimate to them. Because it is. It was an extremely intimate moment.
My guest is Julianne Moore, and she's starring in the new movie Savage Grace. I want to play another scene from one of your films, and this is from Far From Heaven, which was directed by Todd Haynes, who first directed you in Safe.
That's right.
And more recently, you were in his film about the many different Bob Dylans. I'm not there.
Yeah.
And Far From Heaven is an homage to the 1950s melodramas of Douglas Sirk. Movies like All That Heaven Allows, Imitation of Life, Magnificent Obsession. And in a lot of those films, there's personal secrets, dark secrets, lovers kept apart by close-minded social mores of the day. And this Far From Heaven has all of that, and it's filmed in those, like, saturated colors of the 50s melodramas.
Yeah.
And in this movie, you're a suburban mother and homemaker in the 1950s, unaware that your husband is a closeted homosexual.
Right.
And you and your African-American gardener, who's played by Dennis Haysbert, who is probably best known for his role as the president on 24, you start to develop feelings toward each other and slowly fall in love. But, of course, it's pre-civil rights movement. You're married. This is a love that cannot be.
That's right.
So here's a scene. Let me play a scene where you and the Dennis Haysbert character are walking through the woods. You're looking at the beautiful flowers and the leaves, and he's looking at a bruise on your face that you got in a fight with your husband.
Oh, look. How lovely.
Did he cause that?
He didn't mean to strike me.
I'm so sorry.
No. Heaven knows we all have our troubles. I'm sure you yourself...
What?
I don't know. Ever since running into you at the exhibition, I kept wondering what it must be like to be the only one in a room. Colored or whatever it was. How that might possibly feel. I'm sure I've never...
I suppose you sort of grow accustomed to it over time. I mean, don't get me wrong. There is a world, even here in Hartford, where everybody does indeed look like me. The trouble is, very few people ever leave that world.
It's a scene from Far From Heaven with my guest Julianne Moore and Dennis Haysbert. Everything in this movie is so heightened. You know, the colors, mm-hmm. the birds in the background. Yeah. You're speaking like movie speech. It's not.
Yes.
It's intentionally exactly. not naturalistic.
Right. Right.
Did you go back and watch those 50s melodramas before making the film?
Yeah. I mean, All That Heaven Allows, particularly, was instrumental. I mean, because that's the movie that it most resembles. You know, it's so wonderful sometimes to work in a specific style because there's so much feeling it can hold. You know, you have these rules. There's these conventions about, you know, what the, you know, all the colors are meaningful. All, you know, the speech is meaningful. The way people move, you know, there's intention in absolutely every moment of it.
So when you were watching the Douglas Sirk movies in preparation for making Far From Heaven, what else did you notice in the film in terms of the style of acting of that genre from the period?
Well, you know, it's interesting because for us, it's easy to make fun of it. It's easy to make fun of that kind of style and that kind of those sort of vocal choices but what makes it work and what makes it beautiful in the Sirk films and hopefully in Far From Heaven too is that it's filled. It's that you might have this very stylized way of speaking, but if the emotion is behind it, if it's meaningful, it's very moving. Because you realize people are not saying what they want to say all the time, or they're just trying to communicate another way. So the trick was, and when you watch them, Rock Hudson and Jane Wyman, for example, you realize it's all very deeply felt. Even though the language seems arch or weird, it's meaningful, and that's what kind of makes it beautiful. Like I said, you've got all this content behind the style, and when you have that, I think it's quite powerful.
Now, I know you grew up in a military family. Do you move around a lot as a kid?
Oh yeah, a lot. You know, I went to like 9 different schools growing up. But you know, that's not uncommon for an actor. And you find with a lot of actors, if they're not military kids, they're embassy kids or traveling salesman kids or minister's kids. Any of those sort of itinerant upbringing seem to produce actors.
What do you think that is?
Behavior. You know, you learn very, very quickly how to change behavior from place to place. You learn that it's malleable, you know, so who you were was determined by how you were perceived. And as a consequence, I was like, well, you know, my identity felt really, really fluid. It wasn't until I was an adult, I think, and that I think it takes a long time for any of us to really try to figure out who you are. But I mean, mine was delayed significantly by moving around.
One more question. I know you have a couple of kids who are in school.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're in school plays or not, but do you go to the school plays? I think there's something that's so endearing about watching kids act.
My son, this is unbelievable because he's 10, he's in the 4th grade. They did Macbeth the other day.
They didn't.
Yeah, it was an abridged version. It was, you know, completely, it was abridged, but they all got a part. They picked parts out of the hat and they performed it. And the clarity was astonishing. There was a line that I heard the Lady Macbeth say that I had never really heard before where she says, "I would have killed him myself, but he reminded me of my father." And I went, huh? It's like, I didn't know she said that. And here's this little girl. And I just like snapped to attention. It was beautiful. It was really, really beautiful because, and especially with that kind of language, you when you see somebody when you see them communicate to each other that way and try to tell a story, it's quite moving and really authentic.
Did you cry?
Oh, did I? Yeah, I think I probably did. It doesn't take much to make me cry when my kids do things.
Julianne Moore, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Julianne Moore stars in the new film Savage Grace. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, Patty Leswing, Jonathan Menjivar, and John Sheehan. I'm Terry Gross.